You're listening to Community Conversations on the Forum on the Hill. From 4 to 6 p.m. each day this week, we'll talk with lawmakers, educators, health professionals, and local leaders in an effort to promote collaboration on community-wide issues. Let's navigate the path forward together. Presented by Alliance Health, Chapel Hill Transit, Durham Technical Community College, Grub Properties, Trinsic Residential Group, and UNC Health. The Forum on the Hill, only on 97.9 The Hill and chapelboro.com.
And welcome into the Forum on the Hill. Aaron Keck here with you in 97.9 The Hill Studios. Thank you so much for being with us. Thanks to all of our sponsors and all of our panelists who are with us all week long to talk about the issues affecting our community and, in some cases, the Triangle at large, and talk about potential solutions to the challenges that we face. This hour, we're talking about one of the biggest issues that we're always facing, the issue of housing, housing access, and housing affordability. And we are joined in the studio by three very special guests, panelists who are experts in their field, to say the least. Dolores Bailey is the Executive Director of Empowerment, Inc. Dolores, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you for having me, Aaron. This is really exciting. Good to be here.
Pam Heminger is the Mayor of Chapel Hill. Mayor, good to be with you as always.
Thank you for having me as well. Happy to be here.
And Holly Ficarro is the CEO of the Home Builders Association of Durham, Orange, and Chatham Counties. Holly, thank you so much for being here as well.
Thank you for having me.
And a whole bunch of different facets of this topic that we could get into. We only have an hour, and as we know well, that's not nearly enough to even begin to scratch the surface. But I want to begin by talking about just the current state of the housing market in Chapel Hill, Carrboro, Orange County. And again, this is also a regional thing as well, but just starting in the Orange County area, what are we seeing in terms of the needs that people have? What is the demand for housing, and what is the gap between the demand that's out there and the supply that's currently in existence and the supply that's coming? Dolores, I know you work every day with folks who are struggling for housing and trying to find affordable housing in our community, and you know this issue better than anyone. What is the state of things right now, and what are the trends? How has it evolved in the last few years?
So, Aaron, a couple of things I'd like to first define, and that's cost burden. Cost burden is anybody who's paying, a resident is paying over 30% of their income towards their housing needs. So for a, as far as homeowners, 19% of the people living in Chapel Hill are cost burden. That's homeowners. 51% of the renters are cost burden. So when we talk about the problems of what we've got going on, we need to understand actually who we're talking to, and that's several of our residents in the town of Chapel Hill. So I wanted to share that with you. Holly, did you want to share some of the statistics?
Sure. According to the Wells Fargo housing economic data that I just got hot off the presses, so Chapel Hill is part of the Durham-Chapel Hill metro statistical area, so I'm going to be giving that sort of those numbers. Over the third quarter of 2021, our housing prices grew by 7.2%. It was 6% in the second quarter, so we're seeing a steady growth of 1% per quarter. And 17.5% increase in home prices over last year. We know the need is massive in this area. We've got over 60 people a day moving to the Durham-Chapel Hill Triangle, Research Triangle area. In Chapel Hill, I think that one of the struggles that we have is we don't have a ton of supply. So in terms of demand, demand is huge. Do we want them to live in our community? Absolutely, yes, we do. Do we have a place for them to live? It's slow going. Right now, there are a number of constraints to delivering new homes to the market. So the thing we always have is land. It's hard to find land, especially in Chapel Hill. Supply chain issues. There are a whole lot of cargo liners off the Pacific sitting with windows and siding and cabinets, really important things for folks that want to be moving into their homes. Labor is a massive issue. We have such a shortage.
That was pre-pandemic too, wasn't it?
Yeah. It was, and significantly worse. And we're doing a lot of really exciting things to address the construction labor. But those are some of the demands. And so to put it back to Dolores, you know, the average home price in Chapel Hill is $498,000. That's the median home price in October.
Makes me cringe.
That household has to have a minimum income of $120,000 to qualify for a mortgage. And again, back to the cost burden, we're not taking care of our middle workers, and we're definitely not taking care of the folks who are living on Medicaid, Medicare, and so I'll
minimum wage,
absolutely. So I'll pitch it back to our community advocates here and let them riff on how we serve those folks in housing.
And that $500,000 for a house, that's not the 51% that you mentioned that are renting. That's the even larger percentage.
That's right. That's that 19%. It's really interesting when Holly was given those statistics. We've been doing this broadcast for many years. I've done this for several years, and I remember when we were saying the average cost of a house in Chapel Hill was $235,000, and that was really, really
massive.
Yes.
Right? Yeah.
And so I'm just thinking now about how this number continues to grow, and the number of people that are not making $120,000, and at $725,000, that's only $15,000 a year. Nowhere near that. So then what we're talking about is those people won't be homeowners, they'll be renters. And to go back to the point that Holly was mentioning, there's not inventory for that in Chapel Hill, Carrboro, Orange County. And lots of things that are adding to that. But what concerns me most, especially as an African American, is that there are several minorities that are leaving our community. And that's the shame. That's the rest of the shame of this whole housing industry that's going on.
Mayor Heminger, see this from so many different perspectives.
Yeah, and you got to set the stage even further. You know, 90% of the people who work in Chapel Hill come from outside our community because they can't afford to live here. Whereas you need your essential workers, and you're an essential worker, to be able to be close by, to be part of the community that they work in. And then 60% of the community who lives here gets up every day and leaves the community because they have the resources or they've got that great, you know, job making over 120. And so we need that balance back here. And then you throw in this interesting factoid. Chapel Hill area did not build much multifamily for about a 30-year period. So when you don't do that, you have really old stock, which is not in great shape, which becomes your affordable housing, and you've got brand new luxury stock. What's going to happen when that old stock ends up coming back up for redevelopment? You're going to be losing those rental areas as well.
You may not lose them, but you're going to spend a whole lot of money to keep them that way. That's the problem.
They're going to have to be renovated at some point.
Yeah, that's
and
what I mean.
To build a new unit of housing, and even an apartment, is over $200,000 per unit now to build a unit. If you back into what the rent would be just for that $200,000, you see the problem is glaring. Yeah. You can't make those numbers work. So what do you do? And as a town, we've tried to incorporate and bring people to the table to say, how do we solve this together? How do we get what we want? We know we want more people to be able to afford here. We know we want diversity of people from all economic ranges, all kinds of diversity
cultural
is what we want, right?
Mm-hmm.
Social, all that. So how do we do that in a landlocked situation? Yeah. And I was at the North Carolina Metro Mayor's meeting last week, and this came up as well. This is not just a Chapel Hill or a region problem. This is not just a statewide problem, but all the mayors are saying, same thing. We don't have enough housing supply to meet the drive of all the workers coming to North Carolina. That's one problem. The other problem is, how do we keep the people who are already here. Housed so they're not having to spend an hour and a half driving each way to get to their job? Because that's not good for their health and livelihood. It's not good for the environment to have people going back and forth an hour or more to their jobs, because everyone's like, oh, you know, you can find cheaper housing outside of the cities, and you can go out into the, well, it's not getting cheap there either, because developers are starting to buy up smaller town areas. So the town said, one thing we can do, besides running our, you know, we have a multifaceted approach to affordable housing, we can start using town-owned lands to help take the land cost out of the price of new development. We have to create more supply.
And Pam, and I appreciate that, but then when you take that town-owned land and you put those houses in there, particularly affordable, then you get the neighbors who say, I don't want that in my neighborhood.
But we did it anyway, right? We did some of those. We voted to make it happen. Weaver's Grove is happening. 2200 Homestead is happening. I hear you. But the council is determined to create those opportunities to help balance our community. And you're always going to get people to push back. Nobody wants anything in their backyard.
And I think I'm agreeing with you, but what I'm speaking to is we as a town, we hear the problem. We talk about we want to fix the affordable housing piece of it. What I'm saying is people listening need to understand that everybody's going to have to give a little bit so that we can make this happen.
I would add, too, that there is a lot of data. We all are Googling things all day long. There's a lot of data that talk about how much diversity and mixed income does to elevate an entire community.
Sure.
There's cross-cultural learning opportunities. Mm-hmm. There's sharing of resources. You really establish a community. And so I would, double down on the challenge that I think what you're saying, Dolores, is let's challenge this community who likes to talk a big talk.
Right.
We want affordable housing, but we are against density. Those two things absolutely cannot happen. It's a math problem. 1 + 1 will always equal 2. You cannot affect affordable housing and housing affordability without density. So on that town land, I will challenge that we do everything we can to allow for the greatest density possible. And that allows then for the spread. And we could add 5-10 households to a 10-acre parcel if we don't hold to the current setback requirements.
I agree with you, Holly. And here's what I'm saying also. Nonprofits can't do all the affordable housing by itself. So developers have to start thinking about how to include 60%, 30-60% in what they're creating. And it shouldn't have to be forced by the government. If we're all talking about fixing this problem and you want to develop here in Chapel Hill, if you want to develop in Carper, Orange, you must take on some of this social responsibility of building the right kind of housing or housing that houses everyone for the essential workers.
I would say, though, a developer's not going to build something they're going to lose money on. They have to be able to make it work.
Sure.
And that does fall back on the town somewhat, where we've got to relax those restrictions. If we truly want to get the middle housing, the affordable housing, Holly's right. We have to be able to be a little more flexible with setbacks and with this and with that, because we make it so expensive by the time they go through the process and comply with all the different rules and regulations we have. Those costs are pushed onto the homeowners or the renters that are coming down the pike, right? They
Absolutely.
Are.
Absolutely.
And so how do you make the economics work so that your developer who wants to build that affordability in can without... And there are ways to do it. Other cities have figured out ways to do this. I will say, Chapel Hill punches above its weight. It tries to do more. For the size town we are, we do a pretty incredible job. But we still have so much more to do. And we get that. It's got to work. You brought the math equation. The math has to work for everybody, or it's not going to happen. You can't force a developer to build a project they're going to lose money on. It's not, and the town doesn't build, right? We're not developers. And we can't count on the nonprofits to do it all by themselves. So it has to be these partnerships across.
Absolutely. A public-private partnership is the way that it works. As you both know, I was an affordable housing developer in my past life in Chicago. And in all of my developments, it was my nonprofit partnering with a for-profit. Mm-hmm. We got tax credit money. We got federal grant money. But we also had investors and we had lenders, and the lenders would not lend us money unless that pro forma showed that in many cases these were senior rentals, but they were all affordable, that they would have cash flow. Mm-hmm. And perspective is everything. One of the perspectives is mixed income communities raise cultural awareness, diversity, and that's important to Chapel Hill. Another perspective is a builder or developer, and this I'm wearing my home builder hat, Home Builders Association, a builder or developer is often working on a deal for 5 years, right? 5 years until they can actually get some money out of that project. That's their paycheck. I get paid twice a month, right? I don't have to wait. sometimes that developer is waiting years. And so for our community at large to understand, if they see that a builder or developer is walking away with a big fat paycheck, well, if they hadn't been paid for 5 years, does it seem as large, right? They are carrying a tremendous risk to bring these homes to the community. And so creating less of a regulatory burden, having a partnership with a nonprofit, employer-assisted housing would be an absolutely amazing solution here. I did the largest one in Chicago with a hospital. We've got hospitals here that we could, and now to get employees to come here, they're going to just have to do it.
Yes.
And so,
Holly, let me ask you something really quickly about that, because if I think about the projects, the large projects that have happened in the Northside community right now, I don't see them taking 5 years to flip that money back over. That's the painful piece of all of this. When we see a developer taking 2 acres of land and putting a hotel on it or putting some condos on it, it's not taking them 5 years to flip that money.
I can't speak for those commercial developers, because those are commercial developers. Those are not residential. So I'm specifically talking about residential. But I would guess that there was a lot of work happening behind the scenes. So, Dolores, you and I were on a committee way back in the day for Obie Creek. Obie Creek never happened, and they were working on that deal for years. So I think that there's a lot of speculating on a piece of property that takes time. We have to meet with 13 boards.
Let's go to Greenbridge. Now, the only reason Greenbridge didn't profit as it should was because the whole market fell apart.
Correct.
So that was 2008. But if things had happened the way it was supposed to happen on the edge of the Northside community with the condos, now we're talking about residential, and everything that it did, that didn't take them wouldn't have taken them 5 years to flip. Those are the kinds of projects that when a nonprofit who is trying to build something in Northside or Pine Knolls or in Carborough, when we see a piece of property go like that and there's no community benefit in there, that's a problem. That's a problem. And that feels like happens a lot more in Chapel Hill than not. I could be wrong.
It actually does take 5 years. By the time you speculate on the land, figure out, close the land deal, great. You've either closed the land deal or you put the option to close it upon approval. And then it takes a year to go through the concept development. They're doing lots of things beforehand and working with staff before they even bring anything to the council. And then we do a year of boards and commissions. And then it's a year of ZZP.
But that's 5 years for everybody, right?
Yeah.
It doesn't matter.
2 years of construction on these bigger projects. Mm-hmm, so that is a five-year period. And it's hard to know what the markets are going to do during that fight. You can't count on all those things. Yes, for a nonprofit to go through all that, that's amazing.
But when you take a large project like what we've seen happen...
Sorry, and they're giving us hand signals from outside the room here, and all they can't hear us.
It's all right.
Okay.
And the land is inexpensive when they purchase it. Mm-hmm. Then it may take them 5 years to flip it, to regather their money that they're going to get. But when you are finding a spot somewhere in Northside, somewhere in Pine Knolls, and you're getting that land, let's say 5 years ago, and you're getting that land cheaply, you are benefiting. And it really feels like a rape of the community, and that you've been able to go in there, buy that property, build those condos, 2 towers worth. And I'm not ragging at the people on Greenbridge. I'm talking about process now. It has slowed down because there's less land available in our community anymore. So if we talk from today on, and what is it going to feel like, and how are the developers going to make money, it's a different subject now. But what was happening 5 to 10 years ago is that our land was going very cheaply and not having any benefit back to the community.
Has that changed in recent years?
Only because there's no more land. Mm. That's the only reason why.
Well,
except for town owned.
We also ask for benefits now. I mean, we put it up front there. We put up what we're expecting.
And when it's home ownership, we're good, because we've got the inclusionary zoning piece,
right,
which we all worked on.
Yeah.
When it's rental, no.
We do get some benefits. We get some.
Not what we need. Honestly, when you talk about the developer, when you talk about private and nonprofit partnership, rental is where we need help. rental is where, and what I hear you say back to me, or what I'm hearing in my head, is it doesn't work. The numbers don't work. We've got to figure out a way.
And we do. We have to figure out a way, because the numbers actually don't work. Mm-hmm. They don't. And so what is the intervention to make it happen the way we want to get the things? We've also now crossed that barrier where Chapel Hill is now 51% rental. Mm-hmm. You talk about 51% of the renters being cost burden. Chapel Hill is now gone to 51% rental. With when these new units come on that have already been pre-approved, right, when they come up, we'll be even further in, because I'll be honest with you, Holly, I don't see any more single-family neighborhoods coming to mm-hmm. Chapel Hill.
Yeah.
I don't see it. The land's too expensive. The parcels are too small.
Right.
I do see townhomes. I do see, you know, condos and multifamily of different kinds.
Quads would be nice.
Quads, I see those.
And
but
how many are
see.
Coming on? How many rentals are coming on? Do you know?
There's about 6,000 units that were pretty already approved before I walked in the door. Right?
So that was how long ago?
6 years ago.
Okay.
All right? So those things, and the Blue Hill Code is something completely different. You don't get to make, can't repeal it,
right,
can only
right,
work
right,
with
right,
it,
right,
tweaking
right.
it, making it better.
We thought it was a good thing.
There's pre-approved buildings already at Glen Lennox that haven't been built yet, pre-approved Caraway that are the second phase that will be coming along. Obie Creek was approved, but it will be changing. They're coming back with a whole new plan for that one.
Right.
So that'll be interesting, and I'm missing another big one that was already, there was one downtown, University Place Mall, sorry, whatever we call it. That's going to be
like
a big
300,
unit.
Right?
Yeah, and
mm-hmm.
so, and then we've got other ones, but the council's been clear in the after a housing study, we want the missing middle. That's mm-hmm. what we want. That's what we can do with the infill closer to town. That's what's going to be helpful in having some better balance in our community as well.
Well, I want to jump in and pose that question, and also Dolores' question to Holly. As a home builder and of thinking about it from a developer's perspective as well, if you want to go out in Chapel Hill and Carborough and in this area and build that missing middle housing, that affordable housing, the affordable rental housing, what would it take for you to be able to do that today? We've already talked about some townwide incentives, but that might not be enough. So what else has to happen?
Well, I think that it is going to fall more on what are the variables that we have that we can play with. Right. The variable we cannot play with is land costs unless land can come through a donation.
Mm.
So the variables that we can play with are, as I mentioned before, so I'm going to probably beat this horse till it's very, very dead. Setbacks. Chapel Hill has a larger setback requirement than some of the other communities that I cover. So that's one thing. There are stream buffer requirements that, according to the EPA, 100 feet, 150 feet on each side of the stream. And again, I could be wrong. I'm not reading off of the literature. In Chapel Hill, I think we're requiring 300 feet. So if we could get back, align ourselves with the scientific data, those are the things that we can control, and then that allows the developer to make incentives, right? The inclusionary zoning ordinance is uniquely Chapel Hill. Other communities do not have it. But there was an instance years ago where the North Carolina Home Builders Association said to the builders, well, should we try to tighten the belt on the municipalities being able to ask for these incentives? And the builders said, no, absolutely not. We want to be able to be a partner at the table so that we can offer this in exchange for, right? And so, I think
how much does time have to do with that? The length of time it requires.
Absolutely. Time is a big condition. Mm-hmm. Time, and now we've certainly seen that time in terms of cost. There are folks, builders, that are walking away from contracts because of the fact that the supply chain and
right.
the labor costs
right.
have absolutely made it so that the math does not work.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned that, because I wrote down when you said it, you said up top that there are some innovative things that are being done right now and locally and beyond to address the labor shortage. What are some of those?
Yeah, well, thank you so much. I actually did my home builder minute this month. With Ty Hune, one of Mayor's former council members, and we have
current.
Still
Still current.
He's a former council member and a current council member.
Former UNC student. That's there the part that I was trying to say. So Ty had this idea to resurrect an apprenticeship program that the town had, and he brought that idea to the Greater Chamber for the Chapel Hill Carborough community, myself, Durham Tech, and a couple of other players. And we are creating a construction career academy with Chapel Hill Carborough City Schools, Orange County Schools, and that's going to happen this summer. And we are now working with employers, including the town, to place students in construction-related trade apprenticeship jobs, and really hoping to bridge the gap to bringing this as a career opportunity to young people and potentially to their parents who might also be working in jobs that are not entrepreneurial, right? I really do think that in some cases we may be attracting students whose parents are like, wow, I could become a plumber, right? I mean, that's fantastic. Also, El Centro Hispano is doing some really fantastic things in the community. Their day labor program that has a drop-in center in Carborough. We are working as a community advisory committee on having some educational programs to those day labor folks, both in the HVAC world and in electrical. And the folks that are my members that are hopefully going to line up to teach these jobs or teach these courses are teaching the courses so that they can create their future workers. And so bridging the gap on the labor issue is really, really important. And we pay fantastically. We pay a living wage. It's very important. I think that that's a whole nother piece of the conversation. Is it a housing topic? Loosely, it is. If we are not paying folks a living wage well over the minimum wage, then we are impacting their cost burden in terms of their housing. Mm-hmm. And so that has to be something that we are concurrently working on as a goal.
We are midway through the hour, so we're going to take a real quick break. When we come back, we're going to continue the conversation with Holly Fercaro. You just heard her, Mayor Pam Heminger from Chapel Hill, and Empowerment Executive Director Dolores Bailey, talking about housing on the Forum on the Hill here on 97.9 The Hill. Back with more after this.
Welcome back to Community Conversations on the Forum on the Hill. See the full schedule of forum topics by day and catch up on anything you missed at chapelboro.com/forum on the hill.
Hey, welcome back to the Forum on the Hill. Thanks for joining us this hour as we continue our conversation about one of the most important topics affecting our community, the issue of housing. And I should really say the housing issue encompasses many, many sub-issues, which we're trying to hit on all of them. We won't be able to in the hour, but we're joined by three people who can speak to everything, and we've had a really good conversation already. Joined in the studio this hour by Dolores Bailey, the Executive Director of Empowerment, Inc., Pam Heminger, the mayor of Chapel Hill, and Holly Fercaro, who's the CEO of the Home Builders Association of Durham, Orange, and Chatham Counties. And again, talking about the housing issue, so many different angles that you can address, and all of them interrelate with each other. But the thing that we were talking about during the break was the issue of what you all have referred to as the missing middle, which is a specific kind of income range and cost range, right, of housing and where it is in Chapel Hill.
It's also a type of housing.
Yeah.
And like I said, there's two definitions missing middle. One is the income range. The second is the actual type of housing that you consider missing middle, which are townhomes and condos. Mm-hmm. We have a lot of single family homes. They're large usually. We don't have as many smaller ones. And we have some affordable housing, single family homes that are much smaller. And we're missing the middle pieces for the young person starting out, for the family, for the technician coming who may or may not be able to afford it level. We've talked about that too. What does the range mean income-wise, but it's both a supply of a type of housing, and it's both, and the council learned that the hard way. We were really excited about approving a townhome project, but then to find out the townhome's going to be $600,000 to $700,000 a piece was not the goal, right? The goal was much less than that. It's 80% or a little bit more of AMI, which puts those in range.
Which is area median income,
area
is that correct?
Income. Yes. We love our jargon.
I'm going to ask you about what ZZP is in a minute.
I know, zoning compliance permit. Is that, mm-hmm. that right?
All
now?
Right.
There's two Z's in there. I'm not sure.
I thought you were referring to the man.
Yes, zoning compliance permit. The big yellow sign.
Oh, ZCP. Okay.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Like ZZ Top got stuck in my head. And so those two components aren't, like I said earlier, aren't mutually inclusive, and they're not necessarily mutually exclusive. So we're trying to find that balance, too. We know that those are what people are looking for. Another component of this is people want to age in place in Chapel Hill. If you do the market study, we don't have enough places and enough range levels for people to do that. As people age in place, they don't necessarily want to take care of the large, you know, home anymore and mow the grass and all that. They want to be in a community, but they don't necessarily want to rent because they want to still have that equity build up. Or you have people who are being priced out of the market because the rents have gotten so high, right, and they're older. And how do we maintain them to be able, and I thought the county did a nice job with the homestay exemption or doing something different. We need more than that. I know. That was a step. Come on. And so how do we make sure that people who live here can stay and age in place and that we don't kick them out of the community because our prices have gotten so high and the pressure's gotten so much?
And Pam, you mentioned renters in that, but I think you also meant homeowners whose taxes have gone
correct.
Up. Who've gone up beyond what they can hold, and in the recent thing that just happened with the tax assessment, particularly for the Northside
right,
community and,
right.
and those communities which have been traditionally African American, when it seemed like, and it actually did happen, that those taxes and the appraisal values of the homes went up 20%, and that kind of thing, when your taxes go up and you're living on a fixed income and you own the home, you can't stay there.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that's part of, you don't get the option of aging in place because
no.
you can't pay your taxes.
And that's not fair.
Right.
You know, and that's why, I'll be honest with you, the whole reason for diversifying our tax base is so we don't have to keep doing those kinds of things to people. You know, we shouldn't be raising our tax rate. The values are going to increase. But it shouldn't be more taxes on top of that, right?
Right
and
right.
So when you do both, when the values increase and you do a tax increase in addition to the values, that's what I really struggled with this last budget season. We can't keep doing that to people. It will push people out
right.
of our community.
And what I learned this time from personal experience was the way that we are appraising the properties is, number one, not fair, and is not, number two, not the same for each home.
Nope.
I had my home, based on all of that went on, that I had my home reappraised. I had them come back and look at my home and say, this can't be. And they changed the rate on
good.
My home, the appraisal on my house. But when I asked why, they were able to change that. They explained the class of the house. They explained what the condition of the house. There are things that homeowners don't know
correct.
Exactly. about the tax process, and we need to know them. We need to be educated about them so that we can hold on to our homes.
And how much did you know? Because you know more than, like...
You know, absolutely,
right?
Aaron! But I'll tell you what I learned. Mm. What I learned was you cannot accept that. And it may not... The commissioners and the council folk were very glad and was like, yeah, let's look into this. But it is a serious problem when a homeowner doesn't understand why their tax, the appraised value of their home goes from $191,000 to $233,000 in a year.
Mm.
That's what happened to my home. 20%, I could not live like that. And I don't know what other people
and
who don't have time to fight it do.
If you don't have a built-in advocacy or a
exactly.
support group, and, you know, I mean... Do I know a lot of 70-year-olds that can use the internet? Yes, I do, but there are probably as many who aren't as familiar or comfortable doing their research. So as a community, again, you know, I think that one of the things that we take pride in here in Chapel Hill is our diversity,
mm-hmm.
is the compassion that we have for folks. And so, again, I think that the three of us may not agree on everything, but we will agree 100% that we are going to challenge this
right.
community to compassionately look at and consider why a new neighborhood in X community is important. Because if it's on town donated land, and we can create some housing that is going to allow for a better diversity that includes some density, because with density we get higher tax value. I think Aaron Nelson at the Chamber does a really, really good job of the State of Community Report, and I know that we have seen
every year.
That as much as we don't love that Green Bridge, now I wasn't here at the Green Bridge time, but I do also love that there are some affordable units in Green Bridge because of what happened, because it was sort of a at the height of the housing market, and
there were things.
Yeah, absolutely. But that building is producing a ton of tax revenue for the community.
How much time do we have? We're not going to fight that one.
But if people could see Mayor is between Dolores and I.
My goodness.
Let me go back to one thing you did say real quickly. You said people who are 70 years old. What happened this whole tax thing was there are people who are 55 years old and own property who couldn't apply for the homestead act. They could get no relief from that. Whose property went up, like I mentioned, the 20%, and did not have a way to fight it. So the rules don't always apply. We have set aside things, and even what the county created, the assistance with paying your taxes, if your taxes went up an inordinate amount, you had to live in your home for 10 years, and you had to be at a low income level. So anybody else who was back to the middle income kind of people, who you're just like a regular person who may be a grad student and own a home, or who may be a TA at you, anyway, someone who is about 55 years old that owns their home and their taxes went up, you didn't qualify for what they created. So what we live with in this community is, just like you said, we all are compassionate about all of these things. We need to be able to think at every different level who we're talking about fits it. I'm not 70, thank you. So I couldn't get the Homestead Act. Nevertheless, if I learned, and do a whole lot of pushing back and forth and people listening, a lot of things about our taxes, and every homeowner should get to know that. And I don't know how we best share that. That's all I'm going to say.
I will say a big thank you, though, to the Jackson Center for stepping in to help. We all counted on them. We communicated with them. They communicated with the community to be able to work through this. But it was a lot of work. I mean, it was a lot of work. We already had safeguards in for Habitat houses and community home trusts and groups that we already knew about how to look at them differently. But you threw in a new tax assessor who was not as familiar with the neighborhood, comparing rental investment properties to single family home properties in the Northside neighborhood. It was very unfair and unbalanced. But I will go back to, the more commercial we can have to reduce the tax burden on the homeowners, we are out of balance in this community, and that is why homeowners are bearing the burden, and they're bearing it unfairly.
And disproportionately.
That's the better word. Here we go.
I love that you say that, but we've said that for years.
Yeah, the needle's finally moved.
Where?
The needle has moved towards commercial. We went from 81%. We are now down at 78%. I know that doesn't feel huge, but it's huge. And we're continuing to go. You throw in a Wegmans, you throw in a wet lab building, and that one's going to be tremendous downtown. It's going to add to the tax base tremendously. The Gwendolyn, those kinds of facilities are going to pay a lot in taxes, and they don't take a lot in resources.
Well, we were talking in the green room earlier. So I live in Orange County, Mebane. It's important for me that I say Orange County portion because I'm the Durham Orange Chatham HBA. But the city or town of Mebane has a lot of money because of the Tanger Outlet Mall. And when I speak to councils and boards of commissions, I often talk about that revenue could have been Chapel Hills. The Walmart on just the other side of the road in Chatham County, that revenue could have been Chapel Hills. But we were too, I'm sorry if this is going to be an unpopular thing to say, but we were just too good for that. We were too good. I wasn't here then. I'm not a Chapel Hill voter, but I was for a minute.
I was here for all of that stuff. They wouldn't listen to me.
You know what? People drive from their really nice homes off of Franklin Street to the Walmart. I'm sure of it.
Well, and I'm hoping they're going to our downtown Target.
Absolutely, and that is an amazing.
I'm telling you, our sales tax numbers now are through the roof.
We've
grown by 15% now with the addition of Wegmans and Target, and people shopping from home. online, which I want them to shop local too, so I don't want to say, oh, everybody shop online. But the COVID and being home, people started ordering more, which we get the benefit of now because of those court cases. You get the benefit of where it's delivered to.
Shop online at local outlets.
Yeah,
right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Go to a business that's local. Yeah,
yeah, but
do your online shopping
shop
that way. Yeah.
I like to touch things. I'm going shopping this afternoon. So it's a balancing, because if you want to take the burden off of the property owners, and it's disproportionate burden out there, you've got to have those commercial things that help contribute back to the tax base. We also, 40% of the land in Chapel Hill is owned by a non-taxable entity. You throw that into the equation, you've really put the burden on the property owners, right? Because in order to run the services, and you can't tax 40% of your community,
right.
So that's another reason we're very expensive
so
here.
So Pam, I want to ask, where are we going to be in another 2 years? As the mayor, what do you think?
I see some opportunities. This housing study that the council commissioned with UNC, and UNC was woke with this one too. They're struggling with the same things. Their employees can't afford to live in town. Recruiting new talent, new folks who can't live here, and you're saying, oh, but you can drive an hour to come in, is not going to bode well in the long run. So they took the report seriously. We took it very seriously. And the council is determined to move ahead, not just to digest it and read it and think about it. We have our land use management, our LUMA rewrite, the land use management ordinance. There we go. rewrite going on. We are determined to focus on these issues of affordability, of missing middle, both kinds. And how do we make that work? You saw our affordable housing. Again, we talked and talked about it, but we never sat down and figured out where we were, where we needed to go. I can't read that.
Don't
with my glasses.
We'll get to it. We'll get to it. I want to ask one more question before we get to that. But yeah,
we set our goals. We now know that our $10 million bond was a good kickstart, but it wasn't enough. Right. We can't issue any more debt till we know how much our municipal services new building is going to cost us. Because once we know how much that's going to cost us, we know what our debt ceiling is going to be. And then, you know, nicely enough, the library, the transit center, the public works center roll off the debt funding. And we have opportunity. In 2 years, I see us making some really good decisions on getting more of those affordability components we want in this community. I can't tell you they're going to be built in 2 years, but we're going to make some good decisions.
Okay. Y'all brought up UNC as the large landowner and also the big employer, and that reminded me to bring up the question of employer-assisted housing, which you brought up in the first segment with regard to the hospitals, but certainly UNC is there as well. What can be done in terms of working with the healthcare system and also UNC to make that happen?
So the model that I used in Chicago had some tax credit assistance with it, but again, back at this time, we weren't looking at an unemployment rate that we're looking at right now. So we are in a situation where everyone is hiring, and they need to have a souffle of options to offer someone to entice them to take a job. So if I'm the university, I'm going to add an employer-assisted housing forgivable loan that is forgiven over a period of time. It's kind of a golden handcuffs, if you've ever heard of that. So I'm hiring the mayor to come and work for me. I've got a 10-year forgivable loan that essentially goes onto that lien. And that means she's going to work for me for 10 years. If she leaves, the percentage of that loan that's left over is paid with the sale of the house. And then for the programs that I ran, we had a geo area that was identified for each of those employers so that they were driving. I think it was like a 10-minute drive time or something. Now, again, back to the fact that we're a bit landlocked, but if we can be looking at some areas with the LUMO, if we're going to do some creative things in the next 2 years, I'd like us to look at the LUMO rewrite again, because there's a lot of areas that we didn't go as aggressively as we should. Now that we see how awesome the multi-level target plus residential is on Franklin, these are the things that we should be doing to create mixed-use buildings that are generating commercial tax dollars that are also providing us with opportunities for housing. And so I think that those are the kind of things that we can do to keep them living as close to their place of employment. the challenge might be that distance. So until we have that figured out, maybe the geo area is expanded.
So my thought was just around town employees and teachers and because remember, so Empowerment's building the Peach Apartments, which is 30% and below apartments for the essential workers. But before we came up with the Peach idea, we thought about, can we build something for teachers and teachers' assistants, you know, make it directly for the school system, you know, and town employees and just those people who are always here, but it wasn't big enough for that.
Yeah, and we have a golden parachute for our employees right now, and we've studied it. We've had a pilot program for a year. It wasn't as successful as we'd hoped, but then the employees are telling us why, and we're going to be tweaking that program. We didn't offer enough money. We could extend the amount of time. I'm laughing as you were talking about me applying for the job. I make $25,000 a year, so I don't think I'd qualify.
You to be low income.
Gosh, yeah, you're not definitely not qualifying for the median home price in Chapel Hill. Why, you need to... You need to marry somebody rich, Mayor Pam.
Here's what I heard today about home ownership, and I know that there is a lot of the American Rescue Plan money that is going towards home ownership. However, we were just talking to a set of nonprofits that were talking through Truist Bank, and when we used to bring $20,000 for home ownership to assist, that's not enough money anymore for people. So, you know, where are those dollars coming from to entice people? It used to be to assist a person to be able to purchase a home and have something. We'd bring $20,000 or $30,000 from North Carolina Housing Finance Agency, and then another $20,000 or $30,000 from the bank. Well, that's not helping people anymore.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of things that we used to do, even with the great ideas of doing the housing for employees. It's not enough money anymore.
No, it's not. It's
and I don't believe that the investor opportunities that I was accessing through the Low Income Trust and the Housing Finance Authority in Illinois, I don't believe that those same subsidies are available anymore. But private institutions and private companies that really want to bring folks in and that have other opportunities besides stockholder shares or stock shares could do some employer-assisted housing. And then I think that we need to ask our private entities to step up and start to create some foundations and some some wells with which the nonprofits in our community can tap into. And again, it's we pride ourselves on our charity and our generosity and our intelligence.
Yeah.
And, you know, we've learned a lot about emotional intelligence, and the town of Chapel Hill's community could really step up by showing how emotionally intelligent they are to come together, support density, support development. We all have to be yes in my backyard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you may think you're yes in your backyard, but if you're coming out and fighting against, any kind of density, then you're not. You're a no in my backyard.
And we've got to be yes to density on transit corridors.
Absolutely.
It makes all the difference in the world.
We've only got a few minutes left, and Dolores, I know you wanted to raise another issue that is a big one that we haven't even touched on yet, which is mobile home parks.
I am just going to say some of the most affordable housing in our county are the mobile home communities. And they are under duress because they're some of the most valuable places. And we really have to consider the families that are in these communities. We have to consider what it feels like to always think you might be sold or you might have to leave.
How stressful that would be.
Absolutely. Yeah,
they're always under attack.
Absolutely.
I mean, and they don't even know when the attack's coming.
Right.
Yeah.
And I wish we would create, and I know that the town of Chapel Hill is working on a great strategy around mobile home communities because I'm working with them. And they're sharing that with Carrboro and Orange County. But I do wish we'd hurry and figure out something that can make families feel better about that or make developers or make owners feel better about that. But
I think all we've got to offer right now is that we do care. We want to keep these families here, and we've got to find a pathway to do that.
Yep.
And what that looks like, I think, is where we have the trouble figuring it out. Luckily, The properties aren't really under pressure right this minute. I will tell you, options keep coming on one of them, and I keep
just
saying,
not right now.
Well, I keep saying, go away. I mean, just go away, because they want to know what the appetite is for council. I'm like, till we have a plan, there's no appetite. I'm sorry.
There's some best practices out there. We had invited into the town of the folks from Charlottesville. Mm-hmm. Do you guys remember
that?
Yeah,
we did.
And that, whether or not that approach works here.
It does. You have to have land, and I'll be honest with you, putting infrastructure in for a mobile home community is so much more expensive than working with a partnership such as Empowerment or Habitat or whatever to have them to have that stability that they can never be moved again. Now,
so
that,
rehousing with
yes,
the security.
You can't move most of these mobile home homes.
But we are working with Rock USA,
and I understand
which is an opportunity
that, but
to
it is,
co-op
but those properties are so expensive,
yes,
I find
yep.
it unlikely that that's going to be a long-term solution.
Let's see what it looks like in 2 years.
Let's talk to those really, really, really wealthy philanthropists out there.
Where are they, Holly?
They're out. They're
just,
listening
just
right now.
Don't
they're
right.
they're
okay.
listening right
well,
now,
I
and
some
they're
going to
do a secret Santa give of some
when
tremendous
I hear
amount of money.
These gifts of $28 million to the university or something. I'm like, could you give them two to us to help,
yeah.
you know, with these? It's hard.
The business school needs that fourth donation.
Well, they do. I get that. I mean, they do. But this community is very good at giving to UNC, and the UNC Alumni Network is very good, and I love it. Education is what, you know, helps minds grow and lives change. But we have needs here in this community as well. And so we have a lot of philanthropists, like you said, living here, and they want to help, but they're not sure how to plug in. Mm-hmm. And we have to give them real ways to plug in.
We've got to start wrapping up, and I've got one more question, and I'll pose it to you, Mayor Heminger. Best practices from other communities. This is not a problem that's just Chapel Hill specific. No. There are, I mean, any community in the country that is desirable, that is in demand, especially when there's limited housing space, is going to have issues with affordability. Where have you seen other communities doing it better or coming up with innovative ideas?
So
what do we aspire to?
We share those ideas. Metro Mayors, again, we talk about, we had our affordable housing staffs come. And interestingly enough, affordable housing staffs are turning over very quickly in government. Off, and so you lose that historical perspective. Mm. You lose people who were in charge of the project that took 5 years to get fruition. We're doing the same kinds of things with using town-owned lands. We shared that one. That sparked some interest out there. Towns are buying lands to put folks on, but they're looking at putting more densely on these lands. Durham just turned over part of their transit center into an affordable housing in partnership with Self-Help Credit Union, DHIC, and a couple other groups to put, and we toured those last week, to put some apartments downtown, you know, close to the job so people could walk to work. We have to look at those strategies and work together with folks. But to build it again, when you think about $200,000 a unit, even the Peach Apartments, right. You're at that number, right?
Yes.
And so it's got to work and it's got to make sense. So it has to be dense. And in order to make the numbers work, you have to be able to build it up higher. And so mm-hmm. we've got to embrace that. Being on a transit corridor. These other groups have tried subsidies. And those have not worked as well because they don't go very far. If you're talking $200,000 a unit and you get $1 million donation, well, yay, you've built five units. Yay. But
it's only five.
What if you could have leveraged that $1 million to build mm-hmm. 20 units? And then we get some. I will tell you, we're putting the numbers together. I think last year we had the most number of donated affordable units from our projects than we've ever had. Between the Aura project, I know that it sounded piecemealed, but out of the inclusionary zoning, which we can't force down the multifamily rental system, but
right.
we were able
right.
to negotiate there, we've gotten more units than we did since we started the inclusionary zoning. Sorry.
No.
Yeah, there's a lot of strategies. We look at all of those. We work together. We don't try to recreate the wheel ourselves. There are other strategies going on.
May I say one thing, political?
You've got 10
Uh-oh.
Seconds.
The next time we have an election and people run on the issue of affordable housing, I want them to tell me how they're going to fix affordable housing. I do not want to just hear it needs to be affordable housing.
And
give
that,
me more 90
that's
seconds
all I got
when I
to
run
say.
And I can do it.
That is where we've got to wrap up.
That's all I got to say.
Thanks again to Dolores Bailey, Pam Heminger, Holly Fraccaro for being with us today and for this very good conversation, which I know is going to continue as soon as the three of you are two steps out the door. That wraps up the housing hour of our Forum on the Hill, again presented by Alliance Health, Chapel Hill Transit, Durham Technical Community College, Grub Properties, Trinsic Residential Group, and UNC Health. health. Thanks to all of them. The Forum continues with more after this.
Thank you. Thank you.
Stay tuned for more community conversations on The Forum, on The Hill, only on 97.9 The Hill and chapelboro.com. From 4 to 6 p.m. each day this week, we'll talk with lawmakers, educators, health professionals, and local leaders in an effort to promote collaboration on community-wide issues. Let's navigate the path forward together. Presented by Alliance Health, Chapel Hill Transit, Durham Technical Community College, Grub Properties, Trinsic Residential Group, and UNC Health. The Forum on the Hill, only on 97.9 The Hill and chapelboro.com.